Welcome to another edition of Five of the Best. This one is going to be about transatlantic crossings. The first topic I'm going to talk about on the transatlantic crossings is of the Blue Ribbon event. This is given to the fastest transport of a passenger ship across the Atlantic. The first recognised holder of this was a steamship called the Great Western. And the story goes back in 1833 when the Great Western was Great Western Railway Company was making railway all over the UK. It was a big, in the early 30s, that was, railways was huge. And Isambard Kingdom Brunel was the main engineer of that. And his friends joked that he's made many bridges over here. And his friends joked that he should make a bridge from London to New York. And his friends raised the money and a ship was made. And in 1836, the Great Western departed Bristol and was the first recognised passenger carrier and winner of the Blue Ribbon, and carrying 128 people, and it took 14 days to cross the Atlantic. Once the Blue Ribbon was established, this caused rivalry and shipping, and enter a man called Samuel Cunard, who was who transported parcels to across America. Parcels and other items to across America. He built a boat and broke the Great Western's record, and so over the next 20 years these two companies, Cunard and the Great Western, swapped the title. By the 1850s the new record had been smashed from, this is in 1836 it was 14 days, by 1850 it was 10 days, and these were still paddle steamers, these were, and their average speed was just 13 knots. By the late 1880s, there were two competitors competing for the Blue Ribbon. One was the White Star Line, and the other one was Cunard. Cunard, who had evolved from a postal service into a passenger-carrying service. And also in the 1880s, a technical advance in shipping that meant that paddle steamers were no longer viable to cross the Atlantic. In fact, the new technology was the single screw technology, and this new technology smashed the crossing from 10 days to 6 days and 2 hours with an average speed of 18 knots. In the turn of a century, in 1902, a boat called the Deutschlander from Germany broke the record from crossing the Atlantic with an average speed of 23 knots. And this held the record for a number of, I think, 25 years. And the reason why it was that much quicker was it was a twin screw. And the reason why that Cunard and White Star just decided to not compete with this is because the twin screw ships were known as bone breakers or cocktail shakers because of the constant vibration of the engine, and they felt that their passengers would rather spend an extra day at sea rather than having 6 days constantly vibrated. Moving forward a few years to a quite remarkable boat, and to many this boat still holds the Blue Ribbon boat. This is the United States, and this sets the record in 1952, and like I said, many people still feel that it still holds the record, although there are a number of boats that have gone quicker. The boat itself was designed to take the record, but it had a dual purpose, that it had a lot of government funding, and it was also going to be a troop carrier, so it could very quickly change to a troop carrier. Anyway, nevertheless, this boat smashed the Blue Ribbon, down to just 3 days and 12 hours with an incredible average speed of 38 knots or 44 miles an hour, and it was carrying well over 1,000 passengers and over 900 crew. There have been a number of other ships and boats which have gone quicker. I mean, like Virgin Atlantic Challenger, that did it, but it was basically a speedboat which kept stopping for fuel. And there's also another boat which a high-speed catamaran, which went even quicker than that, did 41 knots, but it was a catamaran ferry, and it wasn't carrying any passengers. So, in my view, it's still the United States. Atlantic crossing I'm going to talk about is of cables and telecommunications. The desire to keep in touch with people across the Atlantic has always been very strong. And in 1839, the only way to do this was by boat, and it took between 12 to 14 days to send a letter. And this wasn't good enough for William Cook and Charles Wheatstone, who teamed up together with Samuel Morse, who invented the Morse code. And they were the driving force to get the first cable across the Atlantic. In fact, in 1850, they all teamed up together, and in fact, they laid the first cable across the English Channel to France. And having made this, this was always going to be a stepping stone for the transatlantic cable crossing. Having successfully crossed the English Channel, it then took them 7 years to raise the funds and attempt to cross the Atlantic. And they did this in May the 3rd, 1857. And they started off from a small Irish port and headed out. The cable, in fact, was a 7-inch thick copper cable, and it was encased with latex, and it was coated in tar to protect it. And, in fact, if it didn't get very far before they got into trouble, the cable broke after 1 kilometre, and they retrieved it. It then broke again after 2, and then again after the third time, for 3 kilometres, they cancelled the operation for that year. Undeterred, they met the following year, and this time they had a different strategy, though. This time they had 2 boats, the Niagara and the Argamenos. They met in the middle of the Atlantic. They connected cables, and the 2 ships then set off in opposite directions to their home port. Again, they had problems, though. The cable snapped after 6 kilometres, and again after 100 kilometres, and a third time at 370 kilometres, at which time they abandoned the mission and returned to port. Still undeterred, the 2 ships then met again a few weeks later. The Argamon and the Niagara met halfway in the Atlantic, connected cables, and went their separate ways. And this time, they made it. It must be said that their route was a very strange route, because the amount of cable they were carrying meant the cable generated a huge magnetic field and affected the ship's compass. So they did travel a great deal further than they had to. But nevertheless, the American ship landed on the 4th of August, and the British ship landed in Ireland on the 6th of August. And so a cable was, in fact, connecting the two continents. So by August 16th, the cables were connected and ready to send their first message. And the first message was sent on the 16th of August, 1858, and it was Queen Victoria who sent a message to James Buchman, the American president, and the cable had its drawbacks. In fact, the message was not instantaneous by a long way. It takes 17 hours to transmit the message, with an average speed of 2.5 minutes a character. The cable did not have a long lifespan as well. In fact, the cable very quickly became unusable. The signals it was increasingly harder to hear, and it was decided to increase the volts from 400 hertz to 2000. And although this worked for about a day, of course it frazzled the insulation cable, and the cable failed just 3 weeks after it was laid. After this, it took another 6 years before the next cable was laid between America and the UK. And this cable was much quicker. It was capable of transmitting 8 words a minute, and it meant it was 80 times faster than the old one. And ever since then, things have got quicker and quicker. And in fact, the cables today, fiber optic cables today, they're quite capable of transmitting 84 billion words a second, compared to the 8 words a minute in 1866. And in fact, a new cable has just been laid, costing 300 million, and this is solely for the financial institutions, and it is 10 of a second quicker than the old cable, but they seem to think that it'll save the fund managers up to £100 million a year. So that's good news. Next transatlantic crossing I'm going to talk about is the flight transatlantic crossings. People have been noticing for a long time that balloons which were released in America got caught in the jet stream, whizzed across the jet stream and landed in Europe and the UK. And this led to Victorians, bless them, thinking that they could do exactly the same. They thought they could build a balloon, go up and cross. They weren't using hydrogen and helium in those balloons. They were using coke gas and hot air. The first one attempt was landed and was spent a total of one day before it crashed in the sea, not hurting anyone. And really the biggest attempt really was by a guy called John Wise, who in 1859 built an enormous balloon called Atlantic, and that also spent a day in the air before that crash landed. That really ended all attempts of, in 1861, you know what happened then. The next serious attempt of transatlantic flights really came after the advances of aerial capability after the First World War. And a London paper, the Daily Mail, had offered a prize of £10,000 for the first aviator to cross the Atlantic within 72 hours. £10,000 doesn't sound a lot, and there's a page on the website which calculates what £10,000 is today, and that is equivalent to £500,000. So it was a very much worthwhile thing to do. And these attracted two teams. One was Alcott and Brown, who were both First World War pilots, and they approached Vickers and they said that they would like to make an attempt on the crossing, and they wanted to use the Vickers Vickers Vinnie bomber. Vickers were very impressed with Alcott and Brown, and they granted him access to the Vickers Vinnie bomber. The other two people involved were also flying a very similar plane, and they were called Hale and Page, and they were excessively testing their plane, and it was then that Alcott and Brown took their opportunity, shipped their plane to America, and on June the 14th they took off from St. John in Newfoundland, and on the June the 15th they landed in Ireland, having flown for 16 hours and an average speed of 115 miles an hour. There are pictures of the takeoff and landing, and it's worth seeing those pictures. Anyway, in fact, they claimed the prize. So Alcott and Brown became the first people across the Atlantic. They claimed their prize. But just 3 weeks later, the RAF sent an airship with passengers, and it flew the 3,000 miles to New York, and it did it in four and a half days. This was probably the first commercial flight. But commercial flight really didn't take off until really the 1930s. It was really the German Graf Zeppelin airships which were the first commercial flights, and they flew from Europe from 1931 to 1937 until it was really the Hindenburg disaster which spelt the end of these airships. And the cost of these airships weren't cheap either. The average price was $400, and that equates to nowadays to around £5,000. So first class, you're talking about £5,000 now, so it's roughly the same. Really, the first heavier-than-air flights across the Atlantic, they started to appear in the 1930s, although these weren't really non-stop flights. Although they were commercial flights, they were just a series of steps across. They went to Canary Islands, they stopped off, they stopped off somewhere else, and then they made it to America. Generally, the piston engines just didn't have the range to cross the Atlantic. And to overcome this sort of problem, Imperial Airlines then had proposed mounting a small seaplane on top of a larger seaplane, and this larger one piggybacking the small one. In fact, this did take place, and the first flight of this took place on June 21st, 1938, and there's a picture on the website to see this. And the flight wasn't exactly a success because it took 20 hours, and the average speed was 144 miles. This didn't last long because the following year Boeing released a new seaplane called the Boeing Clipper, and this was a huge seaplane. It could carry, capable of carrying 36 people in absolute luxury. They all had cabins, they all had six-course meals, but they needed this because the actual flight took around 20 hours. So this was the first non-stop commercial flight to cross. But even this didn't last long, because later that year, the German Lufthansa Fokker Condor, and that flew from Berlin to New York, turned around without refueling, and flew all the way back to Berlin. And this really spent the end of seaplanes, really. And even after the war, flights were still taking 20 hours to fly across the Atlantic. Even with jet technology, the jets simply didn't have the range to cross the Atlantic. And this wasn't until 1958, when a BOOC comet crossed the Atlantic and unlocking 7 hours of flight time. And ever since then, it's got quicker and quicker. We've had Concorde, supersonic, but that's not the quickest. The quickest flight was made in 1974 by a Lockheed Blackbird SLR-1, and it flew from America to London in 1 hour, 54 minutes, 54 seconds. Now, it's best.